Hey everybody, welcome to the second episode of Bad End, a video game podcast. This is the second playthrough of the podcast. There's a lot of extra content this time. You're going to see stuff you haven't seen. And to get you started with this extra content, I'll introduce myself. I'm Kyle Cookstell.
I'm Josh Calixto.
Joined by Josh Calixto.
And I'm Katie McCarthy.
And thank you for listening to the second episode of our podcast. We're so glad that you listened to us talk about video games for a little bit. Josh, what have you been playing?
Wow, Kyle. Thank you for the beautiful introduction.
I've been sitting on that one for a while, I just wanted to get it out.
You spent a lot of time.
I went to a podcast conference. I talked to some influencers in the podcast space.
What influencers did you talk to?
I didn't go to a podcast conference, but I did play some video games.
What? No way.
A podcast conference sounds like a nightmare. Like, that sounds really bad.
I thought for sure.
It's like a worse version of that YouTube conference where all, like, the influencers go.
Oh, VidCon?
Every time I see a video from VidCon, I just feel like I'm 5 years older despite it only being a year since the last VidCon.
Like, I am so clueless just in general on YouTube culture. Like, I think the only person I know is, like, Casey Neistat, and everyone else is just a fucking mystery to me. And it's... I don't understand it. I don't get it. I guess I understand it, but it's just not... I don't know.
Video games are concerned... Bad End Podcast. I have been playing a few games, but, like, these are all games that... Because Katie is an avid, prolific reviewer, she's already, like, spoken about all of them. So I finished up Breath of the Wild. That was pretty dope. And I played some Nier 2 Automata, which is a good...
There's no 2 in that name.
It's just Nier Automata.
Nier Automata. It's a good game, y'all. It's a good-ass game. And I think you could talk about it a little bit more today. Maybe go dive a little bit deeper. If you guys feel like that. I've also been playing the new expansion of Hearthstone, which is the Journey to Un'Goro expansion, which is also pretty cool. But I don't know if you guys feel like talking about that at all.
I'm totally out. Like, I'm in the dark about Hearthstone? I don't even know how to pronounce it. I literally don't understand the appeal of it. Like, I was kind of into Gwent, like, on, like, with The Witcher 3. But I like that's the only card video game I feel like I'm adept in and I like understand. So tell me more. What's the appeal of Hearthstone?
Well, it's also worth introducing listeners if you don't know that Josh Calixto of RollingStone.com is one of the foremost experts. It's one of the best American exports of Hearthstone journalism. And he actually just recently wrote this piece on Kotaku that was really good and super interesting about Hearthstone and I think this expansion. And it'd be really interesting to hear a little bit more about this because the game is so dynamic. And you actually are one of the few people I know that kind of tracks the changes of the game.
Thank you. Thanks again, Kyle. No, yeah. So I'm officially now, like, I'm with Kotaku writing about Hearthstone, writing about it pretty regularly. So... I guess I am an expert. I mean, I don't really know how, honestly, Katie, I don't really know how I got into it. I just, like, started playing when the beta came out, and I just kept playing, and I just, like, enjoyed it. And also, I used to play a lot of League of Legends back in the day, but that kind of fell off because I moved to New York, and, like, all my buddies were on different time zones, and the only real online game that I was, like, still really into was Hearthstone. And I guess, like, the reasons for it, it's not like it crazy thrilling or even I don't want to say it's not that great of a game because it's a very good game and I think the design is really awesome. It's not like thrilling or anything like that. It's just like it's a really chill game to play. You just want to like sit back and relax and just like play with some digital cards. And like the way that it's designed, it has that like perfect Blizzard feel, you know, where you can like the feel of the stuff in Blizzard's game, like all the corners are rounded of everything and everything's like bubbly and it has a texture to it. Hearthstone is like peak that. It's like you feel like you're dealing with these cards and it just feels really nice to play. I don't really know. It's really responsive. The UX is awesome. But that's what I dig about it. And also, I like the YouTubers who stream Hearthstone, which is like kind of cheesy, but a lot of people are into it, I guess. I've found it's one of the bigger esports communities. And yeah, it's a fun one to follow. So I've been around since the beta, and I'm pretty freaking in tune with the scene, I would say.
I think the proper term is pretty freaking dank at Hearthstone.
I'm like, all right,
player. You use the word dank way too much, dude. It's like not.
Yeah, Kyle.
I'm sorry to call you out on you need this to podcast. Know. On the podcast. But...
Yeah, you
I
need
gotta
to
expand. I gotta expand my superlatives when talking about video games.
Say tight. Say dope. Say sweet is a good one. Sick. I mean, there's so many you could go with.
There's so many, and you just always go.
You
dank.
Default to cool.
And I feel like when I think of dank, I just think of weed. And like I don't, it just doesn't seem right. I don't know. It doesn't seem right when you talk about video games. Like there's a time when dank is the right word.
I feel like there's a lot of stoners that are really into video games, and I don't totally. Even smoke a lot of weed. And I like the word dank. I feel like it's just does a good job of explaining that situation when you're in your kind of like your gamer den, and you've been playing for like
your
4 hours.
Your gamer den.
You're just like in your
oh
couch,
my god,
and you're hotboxing like your own games. Stank.
Exactly.
You're just like
freaking... I do not have a gamer den, like unless my really cheap IKEA couch counts.
That totally counts. You gotta get a good sweat on while you're sitting there playing some Zelda.
Ew.
I think dank is the best word to describe that situation. But feel free to contest that. Wait, Josh. Though I do want to hear more about this Hearthstone thing, because it's not just that you like playing Hearthstone. The expansion that you talked about in your article is actually super interesting.
Yeah, so what I wrote about in my article was this, they decided to, okay, they have this big expansion coming up, and once this expansion drops, I think the date of that it was supposed to drop was April 6th, and the day that it dropped, it was going to be huge, because in the competitive mode of play, they were going to, like, they're doing, like, this sort of thing a la Magic the Gathering, where they're going to rotate out cards that used to be available in competitive play, and then they're not going to be available for use in competitive play ever again. That way there's not like a billion freaking cards and it becomes impossible to balance. So what they did was, before the day that thing was dropping, they released one of the new cards from the new expansion. So there's basically this like new card added to the old meta that is going to completely shift the very next day. So for that one day, everyone was like, let's just put this card. It was called the Volcano Sword. And everyone was like, let's just put this card in our decks. And what that did was, like, it made its own little, like, micro meta game that only lasted for one single day. Because even the next day, like, when the next expansion drops, you wouldn't be able to use it with the old cards that were rotating out. So this was, like, a one-of-a-kind one-day meta, because they introduced this one card one day early. And they gave it to everyone for free so everyone could use it. So it was like this really cool little mini story that I was really into. But then after that, the expansion dropped, and now everyone's just thinking, like, following the meta, because like this is a really interesting time. Every time a new expansion drops, it's like thousands and thousands of people all like trying to figure out what the best decks are. And then you see the meta like really quickly evolve as people start finding out like what the best decks are. And then after a couple months, it starts to become stale. And then people are like, Hearthstone's the worst game ever. That's the usual cycle of it.
I didn't realize they were... I remember, because the news about them cycling cards out of the meta, that came like a year ago, right? Like, that's relatively new in terms of the game. I remember there being like a lot of kind of uproar about that. Because for a lot of living card games, like Netrunner... or Magic, like, you do have bans, but for the most part, the cards that are out maintain their appearance inside of decks, and like you'll have kind of like longer arcs of cards coming in and out of the meta. But I think like this Hearthstone thing, which you're talking about when you're first speaking on it as well, like, really just embraces the fact that the game is ephemeral in the sense of the digital, where it really leans into the fact that you can like interact with the board, and you have all these cards that have these effects that, as far as I know, is like the first time this was ever even done in a video game. For like this kind of collectible card thing, like, I even like the way you play Magic online, It's like, it's basically like a 2D sprite interface, and you're playing on a board, and the cards look like the cards, and there's no like high level of interaction above it. So the fact that Blizzard's been leaning into this new, like I say new, but like leaning into the video game aspects of the card game is super interesting, where they say like, oh, we can just put out a lot of cards and also just get rid of them because there's no actual physical capital that's associated with these cards. And you could just play with new ones over and over and over and over, which I think is super interesting from the outside, even though I don't actually play Hearthstone.
Well, there's a lot of physical, I mean, people are investing a lot of money in this shit, and it's like, it's getting pretty, it's a pretty expensive game, honestly, like.
But you're not holding, like, physical cards, though. You're like, it's still like a digital thing.
So yeah, it's a weird thing because Blizzard has a really tough job on its hands, because, like, everything about it makes me feel like they're coming up with shit on the spot. They're like, oh, we're gonna... the meta is gonna, we can't keep introducing new cards, so they're like, we're just gonna rotate it out every year, and like they have to find the right balance between like what's too expensive for people and what's not expensive enough, because like people are willing to drop $500 on Magic cards, but you also get more out of it, and it's not like rotating as quickly with a game like Magic, because like you have these physical things that you own, you can trade them with other people. In Hearthstone, you can't trade. You can only disenchant cards, which is basically like if every time you wanted to get rid of your Magic cards, you had to go to GameStop and sell it for like I used to do when I was a kid, and give them my like Kingdom Hearts and like Metal Gear Solid and my favorite games, and they're like, "You got $4 in store credit, buddy," and I'd be like, "I guess it's worth it," but I didn't have any other way to make money, so I didn't care. But like that's all you really get in Hearthstone. But I feel like there's got to be some bubble that's got to burst at some point, or they got to figure something out, because this is getting out of hand, honestly. I don't know.
I mean, does the meta actually shift if they're sunsetting older decks of cards? Do the new decks of cards introduce the same mechanics with like slightly different alterations, or is each new batch of cards kind of a fundamental shift in the way the game is played?
Well, this one has been pretty fundamental because of the rotation of cards leaving the meta. So you can't use those like fundamental cards from those expansions that would like be the cornerstone of all these decks. So people are forced to like do different stuff, but I think it'll like over the next coming year before the next rotation occurs, the meta could get a little bit stale over the course of that year. And this is stuff where I dropped $50 on this recent expansion, and I don't have like, I don't have that many of the new cards that they dropped. Like, I still have a lot to do. So, like,
so you're going to drop $50 more.
I could spend another 100 and be maybe at the point that I want to be, but I'm not going to drop any more cash on it, because it's
holy
like,
shit.
It's really expensive now. And like, it was easier when like I could do this, and then when the adventure would come out, I could drop $20 on that, and then I'm all set until the next set of cards, and I'll usually get most of the cards from the booster pack shit collected during that time. But now it's like, it's a never-ending grind and like so much more cash, and I don't know what I'm gonna do about it.
That's so much money.
It's a lot of money.
I mean, I get stressed out when I spend like $10 on like fucking loot boxes and Overwatch. Like, I can't imagine spending how much on like cards.
I mean, I paid $60 for Nier like last week, and it kind of hurt. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a whole game for $60. You kidding me? And Josh is like, $50 for a pack of digital cards. I got this.
You get 50 packs. You get 50 packs of cards for those.
Yeah, dude, they like, seriously, the opening of the shit in Blizzard games is like nefarious. Both the loot boxes and the Hearthstone decks, just like, you just want to keep opening
it's like
that.
Penny
it's like a slot machine.
Yeah,
technology.
There's like a weird, like, they feel good to open. They like fly in the air. And it's just like this very flashy, like, it's almost like this like crunchiness to
yeah.
it. Like, it's like, feels good, it like feels good to open, and it like sounds good, and then it's like, I just want to see more, even if it's just like a bunch of strings or whatever.
I just want to see more particles. It's so pretty.
Yeah. There's like a like I all like every event I buy about like 10 loot boxes, and it's just like I'll open them. Usually I'll be like chatting with friends too, and we'll just like all do it at the same time, like, oh, what are we gonna get? It's like really nice. And then it's stupid shit all the time. And then the last loot box always has something good. Like, it's always the last one. I'm like, okay, cool, I got that skin. Or, like, nice, I got that, like, emote or whatever.
That's a fucking slot machine. It's literally, like, they know that you have 10 loot boxes, and they're going to put the dope shit in the last one and be like, she'll buy some more.
It's so tempting. It was so nice for the holiday one because that was the one event I did not spend money on because I just gave 5 for free, I think. And I think I got one of the skins I wanted from that. And I was like, cool, I'm good. I don't need it. I need to, like, hold off and not spend, like, 10 bucks on more loot boxes. And, yeah. I guess I'll just go into what I've been playing. I finally beat Breath of the Wild, which I liked mostly. I still have some reservations about it, and I think it's because I did not enjoy the Divine Beasts, which are the main dungeons in that game. And those were just really disappointing because they're all the same. Like the only interesting one, I think, was the Gerudo one. But aside from that, they're literally just like, oh, you get in there, and then you rotate the map, and then that's how you get to these places, and then all the bosses look exactly the same, but they just have their own little quips. And it's just, like, a huge bummer, because I feel like with Zelda games, like, I've always been drawn to them because of their really amazing dungeons and because of their really amazing boss fights. And I feel like Breath of the Wild just doesn't even have that. Like, I even thought the final Ganon fight was just, like, it was super easy, but maybe that's just because I spent so much time doing shrines before that, and I was pretty overpowered. But it was just, the only time I felt challenged in that game is when I faced, like, a zebra Lynel, which kicked my ass. But other than that, it's, like, I feel like I felt challenged those first 10 hours, and then I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm good. And then I haven't really struggled since then.
So after,
I don't know.
After attending this podcast expo with Kyle and going, heeding their advice.
I forgot you were there with me. Yeah.
Of listening to your podcasts that you've recorded in the past. I feel like I'm coming around to sort of agree with some of the stuff that you said in the past episode about this game, Katie, which is that it doesn't feel like Zelda. It feels like a completely different thing. Like, when I think back on, like, the quote Zelda feeling, if there is such a thing, I definitely feel like there's this, like, centralized, like, we want you to feel this very specific way when you're playing a Zelda game that they really went for in past Zelda games, and they did a really good job of it. But Breath of the Wild, like, there's some cues that are like, oh, this reminds me of that. Or those mm-hmm. feelings, but it never, like, fully creates that environment, you know? Like, the dungeons and shrines are, like, sort of getting there, but it just feels like its own different thing, and it doesn't have the same strengths as the other Zeldas, and doesn't make me feel the same way.
Yeah, it's like, I was trying to imagine, like, a game where both those things existed, because I still think Breath of the Wild is, like, an amazing game, and it has, like, the sense of exploration that I've never experienced before, but also, it's like, I miss that, like, character from the old Zelda games. Like, I don't even, like, hate the story or anything. I just think there's so much there that's just underdeveloped and not, that I wish there was more of. Like, I think Zelda's, like, really interesting in that game, but you only see her in these, like, little blips of flashbacks, and you don't really get to see her full arc or anything. And there's, like, this implied, like, mother-daughter relationship between her and the Gerudo champion, but, like, it doesn't, you just kind of hear it through, like, these vague lines or whatever, and, like, this one scene they have together. And it's like, I wish there was, like, more to establish, like, the Hyrule of before, and the fact that this is, like, a Hyrule that has failed in the past, and Ganon just keeps coming back, and it just doesn't really hit those notes too much, aside from, like, everyone just kind of, like, has this, this general distaste for Link and stuff. And it just bummed me out, because, like, I mean, Zelda games don't really have this, like, really immense, like, grandiose story or anything in the past. It's pretty much just like, oh, you're gonna go and fight Ganon. That's pretty much like the central conflict of all the games. But I feel like this one just felt kind of empty compared to the past Zelda games, which, I mean, it feels empty in, like, the story sense, but not in the world sense, because you're like, the shrines are great and finding new things is great. Like, I discovered, like, this monster. This guy sells, like, monster parts, like, at the bottom of this pit. And then he sold me, like, a Dark Link costume later, and that was really cool. So there's, like, little weird things like that that are really awesome. But
I think part of it is that there's, like, literally no plot. Like, there's like, yeah, three main quests. One of them is, like, you talk to Impa, and then she's like, oh, go get the Divine Beast. And then you have, like, your four Divine Beast stories. And each one is, like, you meet a young person, you meet an old person, and then you ride on their back to get on the fucking beast, and then they're all the exact same thing.
And you're always doing archery, too.
Yeah.
It's always, like, you have to shoot at it somehow. it's just, it's such a bummer. Because I feel like it could have been better. Like, I see the potential there. Like, I like the framing of this. And I like the little nuggets of story that are there. It's just, like, not, it doesn't quite get there. And, like, the voice acting is very terrible. So, that doesn't help.
I mean, part of the intent was that, like, it's harder for them to go chronological while still having their hand in, like, while making it an open world the way it is. Because that's why everything is breadcrumbs. Yeah. That's why everything is like, you could do it in any order and be fine. And I see where they're coming from there, but like that loss of a through line that goes from like point A to point B to point C and feels like a guided chronological story, I feel like was kind of central to the way that past Zeldas worked. And by getting rid of those, it kind of loses something essential about it in the process. I don't really know how they would do that without making it feel like closed off in a really significant way, you know?
I like the kind of memories thing where you're recollecting your memories by like revisiting these old places. And I like that aspect of it. It's just there's so few of them and they feel just like vignettes when they like, I feel like there could have been like 12 more and that maybe would have made the story feel more fleshed out. But that also, I feel like, might have been more tedious for players. But I don't know. It feels like there's something missing.
I mean, I feel like it's something that's different, and I'm down with it. I hear what you guys are saying, but I also, I think that these Zelda games already have existed, and I think that we should not forget that like all the Zelda games have basically been open world since day one, and so they've done a lot of this before. Like there's however many past Zelda games all have very similar structure. And I think that there is a lot of people that were getting tired of that structure. And I think now people are like faced with this new thing. They're like, this is really cool. But now it's also been like 6 years since there's been a good Zelda game. And we kind of want some more of that dungeoneering stuff. And I think it's caught between this weird place of having to have these like super nice temples, but also not becoming an open world game that's so open that you get into like the Ubisoft style, there's all the stuff you got to go do kind of thing. And so I kind of like this like weird downbeat Zelda, which is, I mean, downbeat in the sense that everything is slow. Like it's just kind of, you wander and you do whatever you want to do and you can go see the divine beasts if you want to, and you should, but it's not necessarily like these are like the tentpole moments. I think it's like they're just kind of little footnotes to this kind of grander arc of an adventure across the game that I think we're too willing to prescribe a lot of meaning to it because there is some narrative significance, but also the fact that it feels like a big event, but it feels like there's more emphasis placed on these moments that actually kind of suck in the grander scheme of what Breath of the Wild is, that we feel like they're supposed to matter a lot because they look most like what was in Twilight Princess or what was in Ocarina of Time, what was in Majora's Mask. And so we're like, oh, well, these divine beasts don't live up to those temples, when in fact, I feel like they're not trying to do a similar thing. But it's so similar that we can't help but make the same connection.
I keep thinking about The Witcher 3. It's interesting because, like, The Witcher 3, you'll get sidetracked a lot in the same way that you sort of do here in exploration. But the way that it works in The Witcher 3 is more narrative-driven than, like, setting-driven or, like, just place-driven. Where I feel like the structure of what you do in both of these games is very similar. Like, you get kind of caught up in the places between the main story. But in Zelda, it's more of like a spatial thing. You're like, oh, I want to see what's over there, even though it's not on the way to like this next place that I want to go to. So you'll get sidetracked and you'll just see all of these awesome things. And that's that sense of discovery that we're talking about. In The Witcher, it's like, oh, there's a person that I want to talk to. And then they have their own story that you go and you get caught up in that whole little world of someone else's story. I feel like Zelda could have benefited from the presence of like more people. And I realize that part of it is that this like post-apocalyptic world where like you're not really seeing many people. But I think if like you had more voices in the game, a little bit more personality that was driving it, it could have been even better. Like when I saw like some of the best moments are with just random characters that you meet out in the wild, like the bird dude, Cass. Like, you just see him sort of, like, just playing around places. Or, like, the shopkeeper who sells the monster masks and just shows up at random places. Or the guy who's building Tarrytown in the middle of nowhere. That's, like, I think that one Tarrytown quest is one of my favorite things in this game. Because, like, it couples that, like, sense of adventure with, like, a chronological building over time sort of a spoiler alert for people who haven't played this yet. You get to watch this city get built from the ground up, and all these personalities that you find in the cities throughout Hyrule kind of settle there and build this really awesome place that is like one of the most interesting. It's like one of the few hopeful places in all of Hyrule, really, because like it's the sense of like we can rebuild from the ground up is this really neat feeling. And like I would have loved to see more of that kind of thing. But yeah, I totally agree with you, Kyle, that like this was Nintendo like taking a big risk, and I would rather them go all the way on like the exploring thing, even if the world is kind of like barren when it comes to personalities and people who have really cool stories. But Tarrytown, I feel like, is a great blueprint for like if they were to take this a step further, something that I would really like to see more of. Tarrytown? I don't know.
I think we should steer away from Zelda, though. We talked about that the whole last podcast.
There's a lot to talk about with Zelda, and they I think that a lot of people
so
are much. Saying...
So listen, so when I went to this podcast conference, I learned we should start a podcast network. So feel free to subscribe to our Zelda podcast premiering next week called Breath of the... I can't think of a good pun right now. But what I do want to talk about right now is... I played Rivals of Aether. Do you know what that is?
No, what the
hell? I have
what
no
the
idea
hell
what
is
that
Rivals
is.
So it's like this...
What is that?
It's this pixel art fighting game that was made by this dude that I think was like really into the Smash community. And so it's like a PC exclusive right now. I think it might be on other consoles, but it's like a PC fighting game that plays like Smash Brothers. And I was just playing some games with my friend and he had mentioned it. And I was like, oh, this looks dope. I like good pixel art. And I feel like playing this game was this weird experience because... it's like talking about esports and stuff around Hearthstone. This is like actually a really good conversation for talking about this game. Because when you play this game, there's all these like weird little mechanics that are added into this game to try to make it like esports ready. And it goes out of its way to try to be this competitive thing where you can like choose all these different modes. You can like ban levels. You can use like specials and stuff. Versus trying to like just be its own thing, and I can't think of like a good point to make about this, but it was so strange to play this game that seemed like it was trying to prime itself for adoption by an audience based on past metrics of like what an esports game should look like in the Smash Brothers mold. And I guess this is also coming up because I just watched this GDC talk with Tim Rogers, who did Video Ball, and he was talking about something similar where he had made the game. And he put all these like crazy options in it because he was like, oh, there's going to be a competitive scene. There's going to be this and this and this. And then his talk was at this failure workshop. And he basically said like, oh, that doesn't work. Esports just happens to your game and you can't like prep for it. So he's just like stripping it all down to just get to like the core idea of what Video Ball is supposed to be. And I can't feel but like this game is just falling to the same place where it's got all these things, but no items because that's like a Smash Brothers thing. There's no items if you're doing competitive. That's not fun. So I don't know.
I like items in Smash Bros, but I don't really Smash Bros that much, so.
No, so saying it's like items in Smash Bros is a good idea, but it's like this game was built on the idea of what competitive Smash Bros should look like, ignoring the fact about what Smash Bros like is to a much wider audience that like enjoys playing Smash Bros.
I do agree that like you can't just build in esports into your game. Like if there's a community around it, there's a community around it, and they're going to do what they're going to do regardless. It's really about just making a game that has like that's tight, that's balanced, that feels good to play, and that is like conducive and accessible to as many people as possible.
I feel like esports just kind of, I feel like they just kind of happen to you. Like I tried to get really good at StarCraft 2 and I didn't fail, but I got to a point where I could see like how much further I had to go to like be competitive at StarCraft 2. And I was just like, this is not for me. Like, I do not want to be that person.
Can't do it.
But I will say a game on the horizon that looks super dope. And I saw it and I'm like, I'm going to get good at this game is Absolver, which is that new Devolver Digital game. That's like the kind of open world-y like fighting game. Have you guys seen this?
That does look cool.
I feel like I know what you're talking about.
It's like super pretty. It's like dudes with like masks. I think it's ladies with masks too. But it looks super kinetic. And I think it's actually interesting. We're just talking about fighting games. I was also at, I went to NYU's Spring Fighter event actually yesterday. which is this big fighting game tournament that the NYU puts on every year. And it actually attracts like a lot of big talent from the Street Fighter community in New York. And it was interesting to see like people play Street Fighter at a high level, because it's one thing to like watch Street Fighter at a high level, and it's another thing to like watch it as somebody who plays Street Fighter, which is not me. I was just interested in the community. And like watching these people play this game and like thinking that I'm understanding what's going on, and then hear the dudes behind me talk about like this dude was doing like just crazy frame counting stuff, and he like dashed back and forth and canceled and like comboed in all these ways that are totally invisible to someone, in a way that like someone watching an esport has a different appreciation for what's going on. I think going back to Absolver, I'm super interested in it because when I tried to get good at Street Fighter, I found out that there's this whole like meta level layer of playing and understanding fighting games that has to do with like hitboxes and like frame counting and like everything to do with like not actually fighting. And I'm super stoked about Absolver because it looks like a game that's actually about like understanding and reading like actually moves, and it's about fluidity, which I think Street Fighter and like fighting games are to an extent. But like playing a fighting game like Street Fighter, unless you're like just totally fucking nailing it, you don't feel this kind of flow. And looking at something like Absolver, which may end up being like super easy and like a total like bust, at least it looks exciting because it's got this like fluidity of fighting that feels really like super natural. And I'm stoked for it. I'm super stoked for that. So if esports are going to happen to me, it's going to happen to me through Absolver.
I would disagree with you on the like it's not fighting thingy, because like in MMA or like in any sort of fighting, there's so much of a technical layer to it that like takes so much time. Like what is boxing footwork is extremely complicated. Like where are your feet? Like what's your form? How are you standing? What do your jabs look like? And I think that translates directly into something like Street Fighter, where like knowing how the hitboxes work, knowing how the frames work, knowing exactly how far your reach is and like where you're going to hit somebody, all that stuff is like really important. And I think that's like an underestimated layer that the average person doesn't see, not just in real fighting and like MMA and boxing and stuff like that, but also in Street Fighter. Like this stuff is really important, and like the reading your opponent only comes after you've mastered this like first level of, okay, this punch lasts for 10 frames or whatever.
Yeah, I hear that. I guess it's just so weird for like, I mean, both like League of Legends, LoL, like maybe Counter-Strike, I'm just like naming popular esports, but it's, I can't think of like a popular esport that feels like something that you can watch and appreciate from like somebody who doesn't know what's going on, because there is like this meta level layer of execution that has to do with actually interacting with the game, which is why something like StarCraft 1 to somebody who was watching it was like super interesting if they knew what was going on, because actual APMs matter due to limitations of the engine. And I can't think of like an actually popular esport that is interesting to a layperson, because there's like always this meta level layer that actually puts people higher than the next level, versus like watching somebody consistently score three pointers or something from like half court.
Yeah, it's like a legibility, readability type thing.
Yeah.
I get that. And that's one of the common issues with esports, is like they have a problem getting a bigger audience just because like, if you can't just turn on the League of Legends World Championships and know exactly what's going on if you've never played the game before type thing. But I think that's like more of an education issue than like a, you know, than like,
I mean, or not, or esports are just not for wider audiences, and they're for people who play the game. And the games that are popular for the audiences that play them, like do well. Like even if you don't understand League of Legends, like LCS still exists. Like all these big events still exist for people who do understand it. And they're not necessarily aiming for like lowest common denominator, my grandmother can watch this and know what's going on.
Yeah, I just think that there's like a level at which like if you understand the bait, like I feel like maybe League of Legends or the MOBA format will be understood at a higher level, just like here's the basics of how football works type thing, which is not something like you know until someone tells you, or you can't just watch football and like what the hell's going on? Like, I know a lot of people
have
zero clue how it works. But I feel like if you have the basic ideas of how a MOBA works, you could probably watch some Dota and League and know, like, a little bit of what's going on, even if you don't know all the champions.
I mean, you just gotta cheer and everybody else cheers.
Yeah, exactly. That's all.
That's all it boils down to. Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah. I totally glossed over this when I was talking about what I have been playing. But I played all of Persona 5, which is a very long game. It is, like, 100 or so hours. Probably more if you put a lot of time into it, or less. I've seen people beat it in, like, 80 hours, which I don't understand that. But... yeah, I reviewed it for usgamer.net, which you can find there, and it's really good, in my opinion. Like, I really, really loved it in a way I did not love Persona 4, contrary to most people. But I really like Persona 3, and I feel like 5 improves upon Persona. It kind of combines the best parts of 4 and 3, and plus more, and I really loved its cast of characters, which I can't say for the past couple games. Like, I think I've struggled to like all the characters, and in 5 I think I really like them all, which is rare for me. And that game's really good, but it's also super time consuming, so I totally understand why, like, there's a lot of people like, oh, I'm never gonna fucking play that, because it is like 100 hours. It's like a huge time commitment.
Does it feel like a solid... is it like a solid 100 hours, or does it feel like there's fluff?
I think it's a solid 100 hours. Like, I have, like, critiques of it, like, in terms of, like, how some people are represented. But, like, I think with the past Persona games, this is more an issue of there being, like, a lag. Like, there's... so how Persona games are structured is, like, you're given, like, one calendar year, and you have, like, a deadline to defeat a dungeon. So in Persona 3, it's, like, you, like, cover this whole block of a dungeon, and then you beat the boss at the end of it, and that, like, but you have to do it by the date. In Persona 4, it's, like, saving people from getting murdered, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And you have to do it by a certain date, like, in-game calendar date, which is usually, like, a few weeks in-game time. And usually you can cover a dungeon, like, 1 to 2 afternoons, but... It depends on, like, how you strategize and everything. And in 5, it's the same way. And there's... the problem with 3 and 4 is a lot of times the in-between, like, after you finish the dungeon and beat the boss and everything, the time in between that until, like, the next story event is just, like, not there. So you're just doing all this, like, random stuff in your side time, like, hanging out with social links, which are, like, the friends you make and can build relationships with to make your persona stronger, or just doing, like, other mundane shit, like studying. And in 5, the story kind of is always there. It's always kind of, like, haunting you in a way. Like, your group, like, the Phantom Thieves, will always be texting you about it. Like, oh, like, I'm really anxious about this deadline that's coming up. Or it's, like, just little story things will just always be peppered in, like, constantly. So it never feels like you're kind of doing things for no reason, because the story's kind of, like, always hovering over you in a way it really hasn't in past games. And I don't know, just, like, it feels more lively than past games.
I say, like, oozes, like, style.
Yeah, it definitely does. Like, it cares about its menus and its UI, and it's really great. And the music's really good. I mean, I don't think it's as strong as Persona 3 still, but it's better than 4's. Overall, like, I loved every minute I played of it, and I hope people play it. They fucking banned streaming for it, so no one can watch it.
That's fucking nuts. So. I saw that. I can't believe, I mean, was there any reason behind that?
It's just story driven, and they don't want the story, which just totally makes sense, but the only thing it stopped is people just are taking pictures with their phones now. It's like, it's not stopping anything. I hope they lift that one day. It's like, I understand for a story-driven game, but also it's like, I think the people that are going to watch, like, a full Let's Play are either going to be ones that are, A, already playing it, or two, like, they don't have plans to buy it anyway. Like, I know so many people that got into it from Giant Bomb's Endurance Run of Persona 4.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so many people got into, like, the series as a whole. It's like, they bought 4, and then they bought 3, and, like, you know, like, it was kind of, like, the jumping-off point for them. And, like, I was into Persona before that happened, but... It's like that, like, I think people don't credit, like, they don't credit streaming to helping the popularity of their games. Like, I don't think the Endurance Run is why Persona is popular in the States today, but it was definitely one of the major reasons, especially in, like, the games online bubble, you know?
I think that's super true, actually. There's, like, a lot of things that I think have become popular through, especially people like Giant Bomb doing, like, these massive, like, totemic playthroughs, or even, like, the popularity of Trackmania because of like Jeff, and they had one other game they played a lot of. I don't know, like the Windjammers got really big. Like there's like the whole revival of Windjammers because of Giant Bomb.
I would not be surprised if, like, when I saw that I was getting revived, I was like, that's fucking crazy.
That game's dope.
I think they actually have said, I think they've straight up said, like, the people were reviving Windjammers, like, oh, Giant Bomb had nothing to do with
that's
it.
That's a bold-faced
lie. I think that's some bullshit. Like, I don't know anyone that talks about Windjammers more than the people of Giant Bomb.
Or who talks about Windjammers. Wait, better statement. People who talk about Windjammers literally at all besides Giant Bomb.
Yeah, no one. It's really weird. But yeah, I don't think that endurance run, I think some people are crediting that endurance run so much for why it's popular in the States. Like, not everyone watches Giant Bomb, especially back then. That was, like, a very niche website. I mean, it's always been huge, but I don't know. It's just, I think in general, like, I think Persona, with all the spinoffs and with 4 Golden, I think is when most people played it for the first time. It got super popular in the States, and, like, people want to share that with people. And there's people that can't afford games that want to watch, like, a game they can't afford being played, or they don't even get enjoyment out of games, and now they're just kind of, like, robbed of that. And I think that's really sad. So I hope that changes eventually, but I mean, who knows? Atlas Japan, like, they also have Puyo Puyo Tetris streaming restrictions in Japan only. That's not going to get carried over to the States. So, you know, Sega's weird.
How am I supposed to watch that high-level Puyo Puyo Tetris run?
I mean, it's only for adventure mode, so it's like you can't...
I really care about the story of Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Yeah, so that's weird. Apparently, but that's not carrying over to the US, luckily. So that's not...
So I could just get spoiled on that, yeah. I have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
Can you get dope outfits in Persona 5?
No, but there are some as DLC coming out. Like, you can get the Persona 3 outfits and the battle music plays, which is really cool. Same with Persona 4. You can get the Catherine outfits. These are all coming out over the course of a couple months. Yeah.
The heart boxers?
Actually, no. I don't think it's the heart boxers. I think he's just Vincent, like the main character.
He just becomes Vincent. They're like, they just straight up reuse the model.
He already looks like him on, like, same hair and everything. Like, the main character in Persona 5. But yeah, like, those are, like, there's DLC outfits coming out in the next few months, I think. I really want the Catherine one. I'll probably get that and do my new game plus with Catherine outfits.
Wait, is there... So if there's not dope outfits, I feel like there's a lot of, like, random Yakuza 0 type, like, excursions. Like, can you, like, run a pet shop? Like, what's the stuff that you can do on the side? Because that's what I think is actually really appealing about these games, is that they do this kind of, like, slice of life thing at a super high level that nobody else really attempts. So, like, the fact that you can, like, study in the game. It's like, yeah, there's RPG battles, and yeah, it's interesting, but there's all this other stuff in between.
Wait, like, what's some of that, like,
super highlight stuff? I watched my friend play a lot of 4. I've yet to play Persona.
Oh my god, you play
Persona. I've never had a PlayStation product before. Actually, no, that's a lie. I bought a PS2 after the PS3 was out, and I bought all the good games.
You need to play Persona 3 and Persona 4 on PlayStation 2.
But I feel like I'm going to get a 4 to play Persona and play Yakuza. I got to play The Last Guardian. There's, like, a lot of stuff that's, like, coming out. Or it's, like, it's come out that I feel like I need to, like, just up my PlayStation knowledge, because it is just almost zero right
PlayStation's
now.
PlayStation's the best one. Best of the consoles.
I mean, yeah. I have no interest in an Xbox, but I would get a PS4 for, like, Persona and Last Guardian and all this stuff.
I've never had an Xbox, and I feel like... I feel like there's this huge gap in my, like, knowledge, because I just have never played Xbox games. Like, I've never played Halo. I've never played Gears of War. I don't know shit about those series.
They're like, terrible. Much. I think you're not missing anything.
Forza is the, like, best exclusive. Even if Xbox, they don't hold up as well, I still feel the need to play them one day. And one day I'll just embark on that. I'll get a fucking Xbox One when it's on sale for, like, $200 and just hammer through the Master Chief Collection.
Wasn't Horizon on Xbox? Oh, you played it on PS4.
No, it was PS4.
Gotcha.
I don't want to think about that game again.
Read that review at usgamer.net.
Oh, God. Don't read that, actually, because there's a really fun comment section. And by fun, I mean, like, a nightmare.
I think you actually inspired a think piece I saw come across my deck this day about, like, people needing to stick up with a critical consensus.
Come across your what?
I just said deck. I don't know what you call. I don't have like a desk that stories come across. A deck? Like my RSS feed.
There's some article
about like the dangers of varying from the critical consensus.
Are you serious? And
Katie, I thought of you.
Who would say that?
Dangers.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'll give you one guess who would publish that.
I don't want to talk shit about other outlets.
I played an interesting game for my last one before we go to a break.
Yeah.
I just want to talk briefly about VR3 by Pip and Barr. Do you guys like track Pip and Barr's work?
I don't.
A little bit.
I don't.
He's like, he's this kind of, I call him a, it's like art games, not game art. He makes games for the purposes of art. He doesn't use games, he doesn't use pre-existing games to make art. And he has this really interesting process where he kind of documents what he's doing on his blog. And it often comes from a place of like theoretical backing. So it's not like he doesn't make games necessarily for mechanics. He makes them from a perspective of wanting to say something or interrogate some part of video games. And then he'll make the thing. He was the one that I think last year made the game about domestic violence and like clicking. And you would click and like the lights inside of a suburban house would kind of go bright. And it's kind of talking about violence and stuff. This new one, though, is like less serious, and it's a museum basically of water shaders from video games. So like normally in a video game, there's like water and it's rendered a certain way. And there's this interesting economy of how water exists and is transferred between different games, both in terms of how it's sold and how it's managed and how like performance intensive it is. Because like obviously like, the better water rendering you have, the more expensive it is, in the sense of like it costs literal like processing power, but also better water costs money. So he made this museum kind of like walkthrough piece where you walk through and there's these plinths, and each plinth has like somebody's water in it. So he's got like some Robert Yang water, he's got some like third-party asset water he bought from the Unity asset store, he wrote his own water shader, I think. And so there's not like a grander vision to this, or it's not trying to make a statement. It's just like looking at the production of video games from a perspective of someone who is interested in them inside of their technology, and kind of forefronting that and using a museum setting to like look at this technology. And it was super interesting. It takes like 5 minutes to play, if you could even say you're playing it. And he has this whole blog post series on talking about it, and I would definitely recommend checking that out, because he's super smart.
Where do I find his stuff?
That sounds really cool.
Like, just on his site?
Yeah. If you just, his name is Pippin Barr, and Barr is two R's on the end. He was the one who did like the Mabrina Abramovic simulator. He's done he did this one called VR2, which was, he used the same setting as VR3, but instead of having plinths with water in them, he built small Unity scenes and stuck them inside the plinths, so you couldn't actually see them. So you would walk around and there'd just be like a little placard that says what was inside the plinth, but you couldn't actually see it. So he's still kind of getting at this idea of production and reality in this way that I think not a lot of people are using video games to do. We talk a lot about like big games on Bad End podcast, but we also got our hearts out there for the indies. So definitely check out Pippin Barr's work if you're interested in seeing some kind of alternative interpretations of what video games can be.
This has been Kyle's great Indie Corner.
This is Kyle's Indie Corner. Join us next week. I'm sure I'll have another weird game to talk about. Probably Rain World. But
I really need to play Rain World.
So we'll play Rain World. We are going to go on a break now, and then we'll get back to you with our next segment. Thanks for listening.
Is there a new Sonic game coming out? I feel like
there
is.
There was that Sonic Colors, which was the one with the scarves.
Wasn't there like Sonic Boom or something?
Oh, Sonic Boom was the one with the scarves. Yeah.
But isn't there like
they made like Sonic into a hipster?
Isn't there like a Sonic like a weird, like, classic game coming out or something like that?
Generations.
Oh yeah, Sonic Mania is coming out and Sonic Forces is coming out this year too.
I did not realize you're such a big Sonic fan. Oh my god.
I'm not a big Sonic fan. I just know I'm up on the news.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, because I keep hearing like, oh, they're finally bringing back classic Sonic. Like, every single time people are like, Sonic's gonna be good again, you guys. I'm like, dude, Sonic was never good. Sonic has always sucked.
Absolute Sonic was good. Booty. Sonic was good twice. Here's the one. Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, the best kart racing game.
That is a really good
Sonic game. Oh my god.
Fucking great. Next great Sonic game is Sonic Adventure 2 Battle for GameCube. Both those games, peak Sonic. Every other thing sucks. But give me that like 3D weird grinding Sonic. Give me that kart racing Sonic, and I'm there. I am not trying to, however, run down a ramp and like do a backflip.
Sonic sucks.
I don't agree. I like Sonic. Maybe this is because Sonic was such like a like thing of my childhood. Like I don't have my I mean I guess you couldn't see this in the audio. I have this really old Sonic toy that my mom got me when I was like a baby that I still have. I think it's in my living room actually.
So your mom was a big Sonic fan. And she passed
my
it
mom
on.
Was a Sonic fan. My mom had me when she was like 20, or she was pregnant at 20. She had me at 21, so she was super young. So she was in the video games.
Peak
and stuff.
Sonic age.
Yeah, which and I was born in the 90s, like early 90s, like 92. So it's like it makes sense. Like me, like Sonic was just always around when I was a baby, and when I was like when I grew up, and then when I was playing games myself, I fell into Sonic Adventure 2. Battle, and that was kind of like my first like real Sonic. Yeah, great game. That was probably my first like real Sonic experience because I was like kind of in the games otherwise, and I would play that at like my dad's house on the weekends when he like used to be around, but now he isn't.
But that's like also like
some I sad like shit for
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle.
Neither is
like
my Katie. Neither is my Katie. Okay.
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, though, is, like, not a Sonic game in the same way, like, Breath of the Wild is, like, not a Zelda game. So it's weird that you're, like, basing your Sonic love off of, like, Breath of the Wild.
No, but I revisited Sonic games after that. It was, like, I wrote a Sonic Adventure, or not Sonic Adventure, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It's, like, those are really fun platformers, and I...
Can you imagine?
I don't understand why people don't. I don't understand why people don't dig Sonic games. Like they used to be good, and the adventure games are like they don't hold up as well as they once did. But
can you imagine?
You know, like I don't.
Can you imagine if Mario was called Super Mario the Plumber, like Sonic the Hedgehog?
That would be great, actually. That's like a missed opportunity.
The human Super Mario the human. Oh no, because he's not a human. He's a plumber. Okay, really quickly.
Well, I mean, he's not a human. If you see the what's that Sonic Odyssey or not
yeah,
Sonic? Oh my God, the Mario,
Mario
Odyssey.
Mario Odyssey.
Oh yeah, Mario the Plumber
Sonic
Odyssey. Odyssey.
So
we're like he's just Mario in Human Land, and it's New Donk City, and it's really weird. Mm-hmm. So like he's a different brand of thing. Like plumbers aren't humans in Mario World.
What? It's like Hello Kitty's not now. A cat. You know.
I mean. Is she?
And Pokemon aren't
no,
animals.
She's not. She's a human.
Is she not? What?
Yeah.
What?
That's the lore.
That's not
the
real.
Official lore.
That's not the lore of Hello Kitty.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not legit.
Really quickly.
I don't believe
break
that.
Break down
I
the Sonic claim, though.
I grew up with Sonic as well. You know, Sonic was always very special to me growing up. The first handheld I had was actually a Game Boy. However... The second handheld I had.
However.
The first one like that ever belonged to me that wasn't like my parents' Game Boy was a Game Gear. A Sega Game Gear. And I had Sonic for that. And it was like the only game I played. And you know what? I would go over to my uncle's house and he had a Sega Genesis. And I would like play Sonic. And I was like, this game's the best. But the only reason why is because I thought Sonic was a dope character. And I still do. And I think Sonic is cool. Like Sonic's a cool dude. He's a cool. He likes to go fast.
He's cool.
He's got
to go fast.
Dude, Sonic
he wears
is
those shoes.
Lord, man.
My buddy.
You know who's the cool? Wait. You know who's the coolest Sonic character, though? Is Knuckles.
That's true.
Because all... He's very cool.
Knuckles the Enchilada.
And then in an adventure, like, he has the best music. Like, all his levels have the best music.
He's also he's the best grinds.
He's, like, he's a punch guy. He's got, like, the big chest, and he's like, I punch shit! Like, that's a Knuckles. And he's got, like, fucking dreads for no reason.
He's got very problematic dreads.
But he's got, like, dreads. Like, what? Anyway.
I just can't look at Knuckles without thinking of the Pumpkin Hill song.
That's a dope song.
Which is a really good song. Like,
one might call it...
Legitimately.
Dank song.
What was that
dank,
word?
That word again.
There it is. But, like, I had a buddy who was, like, my best friend. And I looked up to him, and he used to be so into Sonic that he would wear red Converse with, like, high socks to school. Yeah,
you'd turn into a hedgehog.
Yeah, he pretended he was a hedgehog.
Knuckles isn't a hedgehog, he's an echidna.
No, I'm talking about Sonic. He's pretending he's Sonic.
Oh, you're talking about Sonic.
Yeah,
whoops.
I went back Sonic.
Okay.
It's all right.
I'm fucking up already.
It's okay, Katie. you're done. We're going to have a talk with you after this.
I can't take this, Sonic hate.
You obviously didn't come with us to the podcast expo. But Sonic is, like, just such a shitty game. It's just such a bad game. Like, the whole thing is about speed, and I'm all about that. I'm all about, like, going through these levels super fast.
Do you take speed? Is speed your drug of choice?
Yes. But Sonic, it's like, okay, let's let you go really fast. You slowly build up. Like, it takes you, you know, 5-6 seconds to get to your full speed. You start spinning. You're going down a hill. You're going through these loop-de-loops. And then it's like they just put a fucking wall in front of you. And it's just like, poof, it's just like you just run into a wall. It's like, what is the point of playing this game now? Like, you put a wall in front of me. And it's like a 2D side scroller where it's like, oh, all of a sudden there's a freaking wall here.
You have to predict it. You have to know. You have to pay attention. You're not very observant,
Josh. I did pay attention. I paid attention. And I pay attention. But it's like, so, it doesn't make sense. Like, why is the obstacle stop all your game is about?
This is why Sonic is better as a kart racer.
I mean, All-Stars Racing does not... It's a Sega game. It's not a Sonic game. Sonic's name
Sonic's
may be
name
on
is
it,
the first name.
But I feel like what makes that game great is all of Sega's properties.
I think what makes that...
Happy Family.
What makes that game
like
great...
Like, Jessa Radio.
And,
Jessa Radio, Sega's greatest
Danica
game.
Patrick. Willemus from Total War. It's just like a great cast of characters.
Willemus?
Team Fortress.
Oh, yeah, dude. Willemus. Team Fortress is a character. If you guys haven't played Sonic All-Stars Racing, it's a game where, like, every character from anything you can, like, possibly imagine is in this shit. It's like, I don't even know how they license this. Literally, Danica Patrick is one of the people who's in this game. Team Fortress
really
is a character. Like, you could tag team between all the three, like, the Pyro, the Heavy, and the, like, Demo
Soldier,
Man or
Soldier. You can also Soldier. play as General Winter from Company of Heroes. He drives a tank. Dude, I'm serious. If you have not played Sonic and All-Stars
really,
Racing, it's so good.
It's really good. It's weird because you wouldn't expect a Sega kart racing game to be good. It sounds like a nightmare when you like.
You can't even say the name without
it.
Throwing up a little bit. It's like way too many words.
Yeah. It's like Sega All-Stars Racing transformed, and it's like, that's too much, or whatever. But yeah, and Jet Set Radio's in it, which is like one of my favorite games ever.
I just
and
like
it's great.
The level design
and gave me hope.
Amazing.
I was like, oh, are they gonna bring back Jet Set Radio with all these shiny new assets?
And like Samba de Amigo and like Billy Hatcher, like they've got like all these like super 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 dope levels. It like makes me like it makes me feel like I'm a Sega fan despite the fact that I hate Sonic.
Back to how bad
because
Sonic
I like
it
Total
tricks
War
you.
And I
it
like
tricks
Company
you into
Heroes.
Thinking you like Sonic.
Yeah.
On that note, think about the fact that Sonic is like one of the iconic characters in video games. And there's not one all-time great Sonic game.
I feel like Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is the all-time great Sonic game.
Okay, maybe the all-time great Sonic game, but it's like a middling game. Like, it's an okay game.
No, it's not. Oh my god, I can't take
I need someone to tell me what's so good about Sonic, because, like,
They're just good platformers. Knuckles. I don't know.
But it's not.
They're fun.
It's like a racing game that wants to be a platformer that is bad at it. A single player racing game.
I don't think they're bad.
I feel like Echo is the best Sonic game. Echo the Dolphin.
I think it is worth considering games like a lot of games try to be Mario. What other games try to be Sonic?
None, because it's
that is actually true. That's actually a good point.
I mean,
whatever. But Sonic's kind of trying to be Mario, and it's a, like that's why it got started. Sega's like, we need to have a Mario. Let's have this cool hedgehog with attitude that like can go in a ball.
The whole premise of Sonic is a hedgehog with attitude. That's like the most.
That's essentially, or that's more like Sonic thing. And recent like. Now Sonic has a bandana and very weirdly long legs, and that's like new Sonic.
I think Sonic
and then
Sonic
Adventure
has, like,
Sonic is cool. Shadow's really cool. Shadow
had his own game.
I love
too.
Shadow.
Also a weird game.
But yeah, it's like let's give Shadow some guns, and that's Shadow the Hedgehog. And it's
in case you forgot
game.
That Shadow was a hedgehog, we'll put it in the title once again.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole. I mean, they don't really look like hedgehogs, right? It's like they kind of have to have the disclaimer in the title, so you don't like be like, "What's this
no
creature?"
No hedgehogs are harmed in making a Sonic hedgehog. The hedgehog.
And like Knuckles is an echidna. Is Tails a fox? I don't even know what Tails is. He has multiple tails, which isn't very. Foxy.
I think it's a fox.
Tails is a Ninetales from Pokemon.
I mean, he kind of, like, that's what I think of when I think of Tails.
I used
like,
to have a crush
Tails.
On Tails when I was a kid, but I thought Tails was a girl.
What?
what?
I thought Tails was a girl. Yeah.
Well, you saw years. Amy, right? You saw Amy, and you were like, nah, Tails is the one.
Rouge,
Tails is
dude.
The one for me.
Rouge,
oh, yeah,
the,
dude. Rouge is like
bat
a bat?
With, like,
oh, yeah,
cleavage
cool.
for some reason.
Yeah, it's very.
Have you ever seen a bat before? A
sexualized bat.
The best Sonic game is Sonic Dreams Collection.
Oh, that's actually a really good Sonic game.
It is. Like, everyone should legit. Play it. Live your dreams.
Yeah, it's a little bit disturbing, but it's pretty good.
What's
it's
the premise of Sonic Dreams?
Sonic Dreams Collection.
Yeah, what's its deal?
Have you played this before?
No, dude, I don't play. I told you, I play. Sonic and All-Stars Racing
oh
Transformed.
Oh my god, Kyle. You have to play Sonic Dreams Collection after
Sonic
this
Dreams.
Podcast.
It's not developed by Sega, first of all.
Is this like the CDI Zelda games?
It's the Arcane Kids one.
Oh! Yeah, I haven't played that yet. I gotta
what?
Get on that.
Play that.
I know, and I...
That was like one of my favorite games
so hard
of
for
the
Arcane
year
Kids.
It came out.
Yeah, same. It's
yeah,
the best.
Like, legitimately, it's just like really eerie and cool and weird, but in a
and
good
funny.
Like a way. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
This
it
is...
just will make you very unsettled. Like, it made me like rethink being a Sonic fan. So.
I know this game. I was thinking, there's another Sonic game that was like a collection, though, that was like super colorful or something.
I have no idea.
What was the
I
new
mean,
one?
Sonic Generations was like pretty.
I think that's what I'm thinking of.
Sonic Generations is the one that's also it's like 2D and 3D. It's supposed to like mesh the best of both worlds of Sonic, but it just like ended up being a very like middling and boring game. There's people who say it's like that game's really good, but that game's like not very good. It's like not yeah, it's just not very good. You could play old school Sonic though if you unlock like I think a Sega Genesis in it or something, and you just can play old Sonic in it. So that's like the cool part of that. But other than that, it's like very not good. Like, it's basically just reimagining a bunch of levels from Sonic's past. And in a weird way, that's what it feels like these new games are doing. Like, Sonic Forces and Sonic Mania is like, they're trying to recapture, like, what made Sonic Sonic.
And they're like,
both
they're
the
like
3D
wait a second.
Sonic
wait, there's nothing.
And 2D Sonic. But it's like, Sonic Generations wasn't good, dude. Like, I don't understand why they're trying to do this again.
Everybody's trying to recapture what made Sonic Sonic. But, like, I don't think the base is good enough or translates well enough. At the very least,
Sonic has a fan base. Like
he totally does. He totally does. Like I understand that I'm not in the majority opinion here. I think that it has played out as I think it has, because the base Sonic experience just doesn't translate well enough into like the 3D space, or they just haven't done it well enough. Like it just, I really wish Sonic was good, like very good. I wish it was like the best thing. even now, you know?
Cause why do you wish it was the best thing? Is it just you like the character?
Because I like it. Like, I like Sonic, and I think he's like a cool mainstay character to have and to like exist in the world as a thing. Like, he's better than Mario, probably.
Is he?
Maybe. He's kind of a douchebag, but
I don't like. I think I like Sonic Adventure 2 so much, it, like for pure nostalgic sake, because I replayed it in the recent years, and it's not a very good game, honestly. But I don't. There's something. I don't. There's like more personality in Sonic than has ever been in like a Mario game, and I think that's like why people are so like attached to it. Even if like by platformer standards, Mario is for sure better because Mario is like really the first thing of its kind.
Yeah.
And Sonic was just like trying to capitalize on that and what like was successful, but also wasn't successful. And, well, like, Mario's done interesting things in the years since with, like, there, like, arguably there have been really good 3D Marios, whereas, like, arguably there have really not been good 3D Sonics, and it's, like, a hard thing to, for that to find its space, outside of, like, maybe Adventure, which, I mean, I don't even think that's really good. It's more, like, personality is good, and I really like messing with my Chao Garden in Sonic Adventure 2.
Yeah. I want, like, a good Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, I want Sonic Adventure 3. Like, just give me that.
I would be super down with another game. I'm sure that would be fine. Another game that's just the Chao Garden shit, because that was such a weird...
I want the... The Chao Gardens are so good. It's so fun, and I was obsessive about my Chao Garden. Like, legitimately obsessive.
Like, doing some Chao Karate, doing some, like... I only did Karate. I don't remember the other ones. But, like, you could, like, totally evolve them and stuff. But I feel like that only works, yeah. Like, in the context of, like, a... like. It works as a meta game, but I'm not sure how you would do, like, a full Chao game.
Yeah, because part of the fun of it is, like, collecting the little animal guys, like, in the levels. And then you kind of, like, collect those, and you bring them to your Chao garden. And you're like, okay, I want this one to be, like, a leopard Chao. And then you just give them, like, little baby things. And I always love doing that. And also when you look, like, the good area and the bad area and how it's basically, like, heaven and hell. And there was, like, a really weird, like, dichotomy. It's, like...
And you got like the cool. Chows with like the fucking crazy ears and like the ones that look like devils and angels.
Yeah, they're really scary. It's so cool. And then Shadow's just like, hmph, every time he pets a Chow, and then Sonic would be like, there, little buddy. And it's like really
And maybe that's thing. The real value of Sonic is just like really weird shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's the honestly. Best Sonic stuff. Like Sonic produces some of the weirdest stuff video games have to offer. You know, it inspires just weirdness because nobody likes the basic gameplay.
Nobody likes playing Sonic.
It's like weirdly this like self-projection thing, like all the like DeviantArt stuff that like circulates around where like people like make themselves hedgehogs.
Yeah.
Like, Sonic has become this weird like self-projection game where you're like, I like being this way. Sonic is there for me. Whereas Mario's like conservative, like Trump's America type stuff. Sonic's like this, like new
what?
Hip, like he's down for like.
He wears whatever. The red hat.
He wears
with
the red hat
with an M on it.
But Sonic,
think
he's
about
got, like,
it.
A scarf.
Oh my god!
Illuminati.
Sonic's a millennial.
Sonic is such a millennial. He's just there for you. Whereas Mario is just like he's got one thing on his mind, and it's not you.
Whoa!
It's so true. This is so true, man. Just.
This is really stupid. But
what?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Like I get the whole it's weird that people like identify with like Sonic's world more than Mario's.
You never thought of yourself
but
as
it also
a hedgehog?
Feels like but it also feels like Mario has more structure, you know? It's like Sonic doesn't really have like lore or anything. Whereas Mario's kind of like he has Luigi, he has Yoshi, like he's saving Princess Peach. Like it feels very like constructed. Whereas like
I feel like part of it is that like Sega has zero fucking principles when it comes to Sonic. Like we thought, like everyone thought it was going to be like Sonic versus Mario for all of eternity. Like they would always be one versus the other. But then Sega
but
was just
friends.
Like, yeah, but just because Sega was just like, do whatever, dude. Like just freaking put him in your race car game, put him in the Olympics, put him in freaking like I don't give a shit, dude. Like. BioWare made a freaking RPG with Sonic.
Wait, what game
Do you
was that?
Remember this shit? It's called Sonic Chronicles The Dark Brotherhood, okay? It's a BioWare game for the 3DS. Sega does
I've
not
never heard
care.
Of this.
Yeah, that's like a deep Sonic pool.
I played it and it's not bad actually. It got pretty good reviews.
I'm telling you, when Sonic is not Sonic, when Sonic is just not being Sonic, it's like good.
Yeah, he's just like this mascot that you can do anything with because like the gameplay is not sacred. You know, like Sega's not like we cannot pervert this core gameplay of Sonic. They're just throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks, and like it all sticks because it's like so weird, you know? And that's why I celebrate Sonic, even if I don't celebrate the Sonic games.
You praise at the altar.
Exactly.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Exactly.
Nice.
So, I think we can wrap up this episode.
Yeah.
Do you want to take us out, Kyle?
Yeah, thank you guys for listening to Bad End, the second playthrough. We'll be back in a few weeks with a new episode with maybe somebody else on the podcast. We don't know.
Perhaps a guest.
Maybe a guest. You can follow us on Twitter. We're on iTunes, Bad End Podcast. We also have an email. It's badendpod@gmail.com if you have any questions. Also, we got really good comments and feedback on our first episode. So thank you to everybody that's listened. We really appreciate your support, and we cannot wait to keep doing this. So thank you very much.
Rate us and review us on iTunes, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.